All right. Here we are. How do you guys like that sound? Maybe I need to back it down a little bit. Okay, so my cousin Timon got me all set up with what is supposed to be much better sound equipment. So if you don't like it, blame him. His name is Timon Esch. and if you do like it, give me all the credit because I did buy it. So anyway, no, I'm kidding. All the credit. He has been extremely, extremely helpful. And so super grateful to him. I'm super grateful to a lot of people for, I don't want to say pressuring me, but giving me a lot of encouragement to start this back up. And so, yeah, here we are. We are going to have a schedule moving forward. And I know that is going to be shocking to those of you that know me. But first of all, we are going to start out with a poem. So what we're going to do is, I'll just give you the rundown. I need a drink. Oh, Timon's also going to edit it for me. So like right there, when I said I needed a drink, he can just edit that out. And then there's no gap and not me saying, you know, what my body needs. So anyway, the schedule is going to be, at least for now, it could always change, but it's going to be a poem. We're going to start out with a poem because I like poetry. I'm going to talk about stuff that I enjoy. That's a big thing for me in my life right now. Not poetry, but just kind of letting myself pursue things that I enjoy within reason. I mean, obviously, I'm not just going to go do cocaine, but so we're going to have a poem because I like poetry. So it'll be one of my favorite poems. It's not going to be written by me. Maybe sometime it'll be written by me. And then we are going to have a song, which some people have been very, very generous and but they're letting me use their music in the podcast. So super grateful for that. And then we're going to have a topic. I feel like when the preacher gets up, or not the preacher, but like the moderator gets up at the beginning of church and you know, gives the whole rundown for the service. I feel like that guy. But anyway, so then we're going to talk about whatever we're going to talk about that week. And then we're going to get into the news a little bit, which I haven't really done before. But I personally like when podcasts talk about the news a little bit just because I do not want to take the time to look at the news. So we're going to do that. And yeah, we're going to try to have fun. I'm going to try to enjoy this maybe more than I did in the past just because I want it to be something that, you know, is fun for me and not something that I feel a lot of pressure or anything like that about. So this poem is called, this is a poem that I all but have memorized. I don't know why I like it as much as I do. I'm not sure who wrote it. They're not giving me Kipling, I believe, Rudyard Kipling. But for some reason, I just love this poem and it kind of talks about, because a lot of times you see this in life is that it seems like there's kind of two groups of people. And some of them seem to, I mean, I know this isn't necessarily accurate, but they seem to have life just very easy and things are just kind of handed to them. And other people, it seems like they have to work and fight and just strive for every inch of ground that they gain. And this poem talks about this. I don't necessarily agree with the premise, but I like the thought behind it, that there's some people that are just putting in a lot of work into things that we just don't realize and don't take notice of. This poem is called The Sons of Martha. The sons of Mary seldom bother, for they have inherited that good part. But the sons of Martha favor their mother, of the careful soul and the troubled heart. And because she lost her temper once, and because she was rude to the Lord her guest, her sons must wait upon Mary's sons, world without end, reprieve or rest. It is their care in all the ages to take the buffet and cushion the shock. It is their care that the gear engages. It is their care that the switches lock. It is their care that the wheels run truly. It is their care to embark and entrain, tally, transport, and deliver duly the sons of Mary by land and main. They say to mountains, be ye removed. They say to the lesser floods, be dry. Under their rods are the rocks reproved. They are not afraid of that which is high. Then do the hilltops shake to the summit. Then is the bed of the deep laid bare, that the sons of Mary may overcome it, pleasantly sleeping and unaware. They finger death at their glove's end, where they piece and repiece the living wires. He rears against the gates they tend. They feed him hungry behind their fires. Early at dawn, ere men see clear, they stumble into his terrible stall and hale him forth like a haltered steer and goad and turn him till evenfall. To these from birth is belief forbidden. From these till death is relief afar. They are concerned with matters hidden. Under the earth line their altars are. The secret fountains to follow up, waters withdrawn to restore to the mouth, and gather the floods as in a cup, and pour them again at a city's drought. They do not preach that their God will rouse them a little before the nuts work loose. They do not teach that his pity allows them to leave their job when they damn well choose. As in the thronged and the lighted ways, so in the dark and the desert they stand, wary and watchful all their days, that their brethren's days may be long in the land. Raise ye the stone or cleave the wood to make a path more fair or flat. Lo, it is black already, with blood some son of Martha spilled for that. Not as a ladder from earth to heaven, not as a witness to any creed, but simple service simply given to his own kind in their common need. And the sons of Mary smile and are blessed. They know the angels are on their side. They know in them is the grace confessed, and for them are the mercies multiplied. They sit at the feet, they hear the word, they see how truly the promise runs. They have cast their burden upon the Lord, and the Lord, he lays it on Martha's sons. I don't know why I love that poem so much, but I do. And yeah, I don't know. I don't know why I like it. Sometimes stuff is just like that. Now we are going to have a poem, which I think might turn out to be the anthem of this podcast. This is by, did I say poem? I meant song. This is by Conrad Fisher, and I was, so when I was wanting to play music on the podcast, and there was a song by Zach Brown that I really wanted to play, and then I looked into it a little bit, and it gets really sticky with some of the copyright stuff. You have to be really careful, and I just did not feel like messing with it. I really didn't want to have any lawsuits or anything like that. The chances that you get caught are very, very low. But I just didn't want to have any issues with it down the road. And so I thought, well, why don't we talk to some people that are, you know, a little bit more, less well-known and maybe local artists. This guy is from my hometown, Lancaster. That's not really my hometown, but he's from the Lancaster area, Lancaster area. And I think he's very, very talented. I think he writes great music. And he was kind enough to send me some stuff that he's allowing me to use in the podcast. So super grateful for that. I don't know why it wasn't working beforehand, but this is Conrad Fisher with Trouble with a Hammer. Come on, Conrad.
Don't have trouble with a hammer or a 50-hour week. Oh, I can swing them both if I need to. But I've been working every day and walking in my sleep, and lately it's been wearing me down. I don't want to live high in the Beverly Hills, but I hope I get to visit them someday. I don't need a lot of money, don't buy my thrills. I just want to live life my way. I just want to live life my way. Well, I hate to complain or get down in the mouth, but I surely could use a vacation. I'm gonna pack up my bags, gonna point the car south. I'll see ya when I see you around. I don't wanna live high in the Beverly Hills, but I hope I get to visit them someday. I don't need a lot of money, don't buy my thrills. I just wanna live life my way. I just wanna live life my way. I'm gonna see, take the time somewhere sunny, I can slow it down. I don't wanna live high in the Beverly Hills, but I hope I get to visit them someday. I don't need a lot of money, don't buy my thrills. I just wanna live life. I don't wanna live high in the Beverly Hills, but I hope I get to visit them someday. I don't need a lot of money.
And that is Conrad Fisher and Trouble with a Hammer. I know you're not really supposed to just play whole songs on a podcast, but I love music. I kind of want to listen to it again. But we probably shouldn't. Probably should get into the podcast and, you know, do what we're here for. Because, yeah, you guys aren't listening to a podcast just to hear music. But I don't know. Kind of seems like, I don't know, it does kind of seem like maybe we should listen to it again. I don't know. You guys thought I wouldn't play it again. Woo! Oh, man. This is the kind of music you just roll the windows down, have some coffee, enjoy the day. I hope you guys are having a good day. Let's go, Conrad. Come on.
Don't have trouble with a hammer or a 50-hour week, oh, I can swing them both if I need to. But I've been working every day and walking in my sleep, and lately it's been wearing me down. I don't want to live high in the Beverly Hills, but I hope I get to visit them someday. I don't need a lot of money, don't buy my thrills, I just want to live life my way. I just want to live life my way. Well, I hate to complain or get down in the mouth, but I surely could use a vacation. I'm gonna pack up my bags, gonna point the car south. I'll see ya when I see you around. I don't wanna live high in the Beverly Hills, but I hope I get to visit them someday. I don't need a lot of money, don't buy my thrills, I just wanna live life my way. I just wanna live life my way. I'm gonna see, take the time somewhere sunny, I can slow it down. I don't wanna live high in the Beverly Hills, but I hope I get to visit them someday. I don't need a lot of money, don't buy my thrills, I just wanna live life. I don't wanna live high in the Beverly Hills, but I hope I get to visit them someday. I don't need a lot of money, don't buy my thrills, I just wanna live life my way. I just wanna live life my way.
All right, that is Conrad Fisher. Go look him up. Go look him up. Listen to his stuff. Share it. You know, I think it's important to support people when they're coming up. But a lot of times people don't really get a lot of love until they're super successful, especially artists, singers, all those types of people. I feel like a lot of times people kind of, I don't know, poo-poo them when they're trying to make a name for themselves. And I think that's just kind of sad because some of these guys have a tremendous amount of talent. So Conrad Fisher Music on Instagram, go give him a follow. He listened to this, he's gonna be, bro, what the? But he has, yeah, I think he should have a lot more followers with as good as his music is. So go look him up on Instagram, give him a follow, and listen to his stuff. So, all right, so today we are going to be talking about Nathan Bedford Forrest. And this guy was a cavalry commander. General in the Civil War, and he did fight for the South. We're just gonna get that out in the open right off the bat, so try not to hold that against him too much. Some of you guys listening to this right now are like, man, I wish the South would have won. But as a born and raised Yankee, I have to root for the North. I do think that the South had a point. And when you okay, so I think everybody looks at the Civil War as if it was completely fought about slavery. And I'm not denying that may have been a factor, but it just doesn't seem like it was that big of a deal to the people that were actually fighting the war, as far as, you know, that they thought they had to have slavery to maintain their way of life. I'm sure some of them did, but it wasn't like everybody in the South owned a big plantation that needed slaves to run it. That just wasn't the case. And when you look at some of the taxes, the tariffs that Lincoln was putting on the South, and I think the numbers are around the South had about 30% of the population and was paying 70% of the taxes. If I think it's somewhere around there, somebody might look it up and tell me I was wrong, and then I'll try to correct it in the next one. But I think it was somewhere around there. So there were a lot of factors when you look at the Civil War that you can't. I think it's a little bit. I don't think it's really fair to boil it down and say, oh, it was strictly about slavery, because there was just so many things that went into it and so many reasons that, so these were people that were not that far removed from the Revolutionary War. Some of the people that fought in the Civil War had grandparents or great-grandparents that fought in the Revolutionary War. So these were men that were very, very insistent on being free and being able to make their own decisions and not have a strong federal government that was just ruling over them. And the states wanted to be more of just their own, almost their own country, is how I would kind of interpret it. I'm not sure that that's, you know, maybe that's a little bit of a generalization, but they wanted to be free. They wanted to be able to make their own decisions. And I think that's understandable. I think that's fair. And I think that the federal government, when you know, was probably overstepping and not really being cool. But all that to say, when we look at the Civil War, I think we can, you know, even something like slavery, right? We can look at it and go, okay, that's a horrible thing that I would never be involved in. But the fact that some of these guys were involved in slavery, had slaves, that all the founding fathers, I shouldn't say all, but there were a lot of the founding fathers, I shouldn't say a lot either, I think it's just a few, but owned slaves. And we don't seem to hold them to the same standard as we do the people before or during the Civil War that owned slaves, which is kind of interesting to me. But all that to say, I think when you look at history, slavery especially, is something that people look at as such a horrible thing, and rightly so, that it seems like a lot of people aren't even willing to look at the person themselves or to look at their life and to just go, wow, that person lived a fascinating life, even if they were involved in something that was horrible, and that, you know, obviously I don't think we should have slaves now. But it doesn't negate the fact that some of these guys were fascinating individuals that deserve to have their lives studied. And so, yeah, anyway, all that to say, that's just kind of a footnote to this guy. So we're gonna look into this guy's life a little bit, and just as a little bit of a footnote or a backstory, we're going to look at what some of the other people throughout history have said about him. I think he's a little bit overlooked. There's some of the guys that were more famous. Obviously, you know, the generals like Grant, Sherman, Jefferson Davis being the president of the South, and some of those names that pretty much everybody recognizes. Stonewall Jackson, obviously, is another one. That I think Nathan Bedford Forrest, or NBF, I think it would be so funny to just call him NBF the whole podcast, because, you know, there's so many other guys that have three names like that that everybody just shortens, because, you know, like JFK. And there's a few others. I can't, FJB. Sorry. But anyway, there's, I just think it's funny to shorten his name to the letters, but that's not actually what they called him. But anyway, the story of his life is very fascinating. I think it's interesting to look at even his childhood, the way he was raised, and some of those things that factor hugely into what and who somebody becomes. So some of the things that people have said about him over the years are very interesting. He was studied. His campaigns have been studied by the Europeans. They've been studied by the French. Erwin Rommel, the Desert Fox in old Hitler's army. This one I tried to do more research from on, and then it just makes it a lot harder. But anyway, P.G.T. Beauregard, he was a general in the Civil War as well, and he said that Forrest's capacity for war only seemed limited by the opportunity for its display. So he basically said that it was only limited by the wars that he had a chance to fight in. Joseph E. Johnston, he was commander of the Confederacy's Western Front, called him the greatest soldier that the war produced. And he said, had he had the advantage of a thorough military education and training, he would have been the great central figure of the war. There's another historian said that he was one of the authentic military geniuses of the whole war. Jefferson Davis, the president of the Confederacy, also called him a genius. And he said he saw it all after it was too late. And he was referring to not turning Forrest loose on Sherman's supply lines, which could have had a huge, huge impact on the war. Yeah, Ulysses S. Grant, the General-in-Chief of the United States Army. Well, okay, so the correspondent that spent a lot of time with Grant said that Forrest was the only Confederate cavalryman of whom Grant stood in much dread. Grant generally just kind of wrote off reports of Confederate cavalry, but if Forrest was in command, he at once became apprehensive because the latter was amenable to no known rules of procedure, was a law unto himself for all military acts, and was constantly doing the unexpected at all times and places. Another Union general, I'm not sure who said this, said, we never know where Forrest is or what he's going to do, but he always knows where we are and what we propose to do, which I think is kind of funny. William Sherman, the big dog in the Civil War, said that he was the greatest cavalryman America ever produced. And it's interesting, after the war, maybe we'll get to that, but after the war, when America was thinking about invading, I forget what it was, Spain or Cuba maybe, they had talked about fighting together in that war, which would have been wild if Sherman and Forrest could have fought together. But anyway, they called him the Wizard of the Saddle, and that was his nickname. But anyway, he grew up basically in the middle of nowhere. He had, as far as I know, he never had any formal education. He did know how to read and write, but it was very, very crude. If you look at some of his dispatches, and his spelling was very funny. He spelled R A-I-R, just very, like, you can tell he was just kind of sounding words out and then writing them the way he thought that they should sound. There's not a whole lot of stories from his childhood. There's one story that says that he was with some other kids and they saw a rattlesnake. And everybody ran away, and Forrest grabbed a stick and killed it. And it's kind of indicative of just the way he would live the rest of his life. Is any time there was an opportunity for a fight, he just fought. It's fascinating to me. His life is just fascinating to me. So he grew up in Mississippi, I believe. And at one point, his mom was attacked by a panther, mountain lion, and Forrest decided to go out after it. Now, this was at night, and they tried to tell him, I believe he was 15 at this point. They tried to tell him to wait until daylight, and he said, it's going to be gone by now. So he took his dogs, went out into the woods, hunted the panther down, treed it with the dogs, and then waited for it to be light, and then shot the panther out of the tree. And so at this point, his father dies when he was, I believe, an early teenager, I think around 14 or 15. And so he became the man of the house. I'm not sure if he was, I want to say he was the oldest son. And at that point, being the man of the house was very different than it is now because of just the way it was in the frontier, essentially. Back in the day, the South was essentially like the Wild West. A lot of the cattle drives and that type of stuff originated in the South before the South was turned into farmland and developed and all that stuff. There's one story that says that the Forrest, at this point, he was still pretty young. I think he was, I don't know, maybe he was 17, 18 by this time. He had a neighbor that kept, his cow kept getting into an ox. I don't know what the difference between an ox and a cow is. Hang on. I got to look this up. What's the difference between an ox and a cow? I don't think... My friends that listen to this podcast, or I should say a couple of my buddies, they hate when I go off on all these rabbit trails, but I got to see what the difference is between an ox and a cow. Oxen are trained from a very young age to be draft animals, and they are raised solely to do work. Cows are raised to birth calves, produce milk, and to be slaughtered for meat. Oxen are typically between 3 and 4 years of age when they start their job in the field. Oxen are male and cows are female. Is that true? A female bovine will rarely be trained as an ox. Oxen are castrated male bovines, which is a cow. That's interesting. Okay, so essentially oxen are commonly castrated adult male cattle. Okay, so an ox is basically just the working form of a cow, I guess. I don't know. But anyway, his neighbor had this ox that kept getting into his field, into his corn, and essentially, this was back when corn was basically your food. You would grind it up, use it for cornmeal, use it for all kinds of stuff. And then cotton was the cash crop. So if your cotton crop was destroyed, you just didn't have that much money. If your corn was destroyed, you didn't have food. So this ox kept getting into his corn. And Forrest told the neighbor that he would shoot his ox if it got into his corn again. And the neighbor said that if he did that, he would shoot Forrest, which, I don't know, seems like it's escalating pretty quickly. Anyway, the ox gets into his corn again, and Forrest shot it. And then the funny part is that he sent the neighbor, it says he sent word to the neighbor that he shot his ox. So he definitely wasn't ashamed of it at all. But it is funny to me that he told the neighbor. You could just kind of try to cover it up, I feel like. But he told the neighbor that he shot his ox. And so the neighbor grabs his gun and starts heading to Forrest's place. And as he's climbing the fence between, you know, Forrest's property and the neighbor's, Forrest shot at him and just shot really close to him. He apparently wasn't trying to kill him. And the guy just turned around and ran for his life. So he allegedly didn't have any issues after that. So anyway, Forrest, he tries to go join the Mexican War when he was about 20. And by the time he got there, it was about over. So he comes home and he goes to work with his uncle. And at some point, I guess somebody had a beef with his uncle, right? So they get their guns and they come after his uncle. And Forrest said, Forrest essentially, I guess, meets them in the street. They're all coming to basically kill his uncle. And Forrest said that it was none of his business, but four on one wasn't fair. There was four of them and just one of his uncle. And he said he wouldn't allow them to murder his uncle, which to me, like the guts on this guy throughout his life is just phenomenal. Forrest tells him that they can't, he can't let him, he can't allow them to murder his uncle, which is very funny to me when there's one guy standing in the street against four people and you say, I'm not going to allow you. I'm not going to allow you to do that. So one of the guys pulls his pistol, shoots at Forrest, and misses. So Forrest pulls out his gun and shoots one of them, and another one of them shoots Forrest and wounds him. And so Forrest shoots again, drops another one of these guys, but he just had a double-barreled pistol. Apparently that was pretty common back in the day, but obviously now a double-barreled pistol would be pretty rare. But at that point, different stories that you read, double-barreled pistols come out. So apparently those were a lot more common back then. But now, Forrest, he's shot two people, but so he's 2 for 2 on his shots, which is also kind of impressive. But now Forrest is standing there. He has a empty gun, and he doesn't have any time to reload it, obviously, because things are happening pretty quickly. At this point, he has... So one thing that's really funny to me about reading history is you just read these accounts, and you'll just read a story, and it's like, this happened. And it's so whitewashed and just factual that you kind of sometimes miss what was actually happening until you take a little bit of time to think about it. And then it's like, whoa, like, that is insane. So anyway, these guys are trying to kill his uncle. At this point, Forrest has shot two of them. He's empty-handed, and there's two guys left. So a friend comes out of the crowd. I don't know if there was a crowd, but a friend happens to be there, one of Forrest's friends, and hands him a Bowie knife, which is funny to me that there's no indication that the friend tried to help in this altercation at all. All he did was hand him a knife, which I would assume Forrest would have preferred a gun, but I guess he takes what he can get. So he grabs it, and he charges the other two guys that are left, which is also insane to charge two guys that have guns with a knife seems unwise at best. But that's what Forrest does. He attacks the two guys that are left with the knife that his friend gave him, which is just a great example of why it pays to have friends. So he stabs the third guy, and the other guy decided that he had an appointment elsewhere at this point. so he makes a run for it. And Forrest chases him down, and he finds him hiding under a bed. And Forrest tells him, "You deserve death at my hands, but I am too brave a man to murder one so completely in my power. I give you your life." And which is just some of the quotes from this time in history are just so funny because they're so preposterous when you think of them in today's life. Or in today's light. And to think of, you know, somebody today holding a knife at somebody and then saying, I'm too brave. I'm too brave to kill you. I will just, you know, let you live. So, but unfortunately, one of the shots that were shot at Forrest hit his uncle, and he died anyway a day or two later. So the story does not have a happy ending for anybody. But anyway, the two guys, one of the guys that attacked Forrest, there were four of them. One of them died, and the three other guys survived and were arrested and tried for murder, but they were acquitted, which is wild. They spent a lot of money and apparently bribed the jurors, and so they got away. They got away with killing Bedford's uncle, which, as far as I know, he never pressed the issue. He was very big on the law, which is kind of interesting. Anyway, so, oh, by the way, the time when this all went down, Forrest was 23 years old. So think of somebody you know that's 23 telling somebody that they're too brave to murder them. It's just kind of funny. So anyway, not that long after this, Forrest was with, I guess two guys, and one of them shoots the other one. They had beef in the past, and one of them really hated the other guy. Disliked is the word they use, but I think hate would probably be more accurate since the guy shot the other guy. So Forrest is with these two guys. One of them kills the other one. And now Forrest is alone with this guy that had just shot another guy, and Forrest is the only witness, which seems like a very risky place to be. And so Forrest tells the guy that if he shoots him, Forrest, the guy that had the murderer, Forrest tells him that if he pulls the trigger and he has a misfire, he's going to kill him. And the guy backs down, and which is wild. The capacity that he had throughout his life to bluff and to just be absolutely audacious is started at a very, very young age. So he tells the guy, hey, if you shoot me or if you try to shoot me and your gun doesn't work, which seems like, I mean, I don't know how often they had a misfire, but it seems like a wild thing to bet on. But anyway, so the guy is arrested, tried for murder, and he also escapes. He's also acquitted. Apparently, allegedly, he bribed people as well. So, which, yeah, seems to be kind of a common theme. So then, somewhere along the line, around this time, Forrest meets a girl, he gets married, and goes on with his life. And he, I don't know, it's hard to know when you're going through somebody's life like this, how many stories to tell. But at one point, so it feels a little bit disjointed unless you just really back off the whole way, or you go the whole way into it. But anyway, at another point, he was, so this was after he gets married, he is on a ship, and he wakes up, and the ship is booking. And the only thing that was keeping it from burning down is people throwing water on, because this was a steam-powered ship. The only thing that is keeping it from burning down or blowing up is people just throwing water on everything. And so Forrest talks to the captain, and the captain was drunk, and he said that he was racing another steamboat and that he was winning. And he intended to win or blow up the boat. So Forrest goes to the extreme end of the steamboat and waited for the ship to blow up. And it did. Killed about 60 people, including the drunk captain. And fortunately, it was in shallow water, so they were able to get a lot of the people off of it. Which is just, like, the amount of encounters he has, you know, really early in life where he could have been killed, had these near-death experiences, I think probably shaped him more than what we realize. You know, if you're killing a mountain lion that attacked your mom at 15, 16, that's going to shape your life. It just is. And if you're killing people that try to kill your uncle at 23, you're probably going to be a pretty different 30-year-old than you would have been otherwise. So later he becomes, he is living, I guess, close to Memphis or in Memphis. He is working with the city, and he is on the city council. And at one point, another councilman, they try to condemn a bridge because one of the councilmen is friends with the contractor that would redo the bridge. And so Forrest inspects it, and he says, "No, like maybe needs some minor repairs, but you know, we don't have to condemn the bridge. We don't have to redo the whole thing." And so then the councilman told Forrest what his plan was, that he was going to condemn the bridge so that he could, you know, get a kickback from the because that was his plan. He was going to get a kickback from the contractor for condemning the bridge, and then the contractor could, you know, make a bunch of money off of building a new bridge and then give him some of the profits or whatever. And so the councilman tells Forrest what his plan was. And Forrest says, you calls him an infernal scoundrel. And he says, "Do you dare to ask me to be as damned a rascal as yourself? I have a big notion to pitch you into the Mississippi River. Now, I warn you, if you ever presume to address such a damnable proposition to me in the future, I will break your rascally neck." Which, threatening to break somebody's rascally neck is, I think, a great threat. Imagine if you're in a road rage altercation and somebody says that they will break your rascally neck. Or if you would use that on some. I'm not trying to say that you should get into road rage altercations, and I'm not saying that you should use those kinds of threats. But I do think that it could be effective. For whatever that's worth, I'll just leave that there. So Forrest, at this point, basically everything he touches turns to gold. He's buying land. He's trading in horses. He's trading in slaves, which is, yeah, not great, but that is, you know, that's what he's doing. So in 1861, right before the Civil War, his net worth is estimated at $1.5 million, and that's about, let's just look. I'm curious. $1.5 million in 1861. See, this is the stuff that I should have done beforehand, but, you know. Okay, so it would have been about $52 million. It would have been about $52 million in today's money. So he was a very wealthy man at this point. And he was really just, he was kind of living the life, you know. So now there's the war. And right about, so this is the same year, 1861, when he was worth $52 million. In today's money, obviously, Tennessee votes to join the Confederate States. The whole secession thing has started, and Forrest, he has a son that's 15 that goes with him, and his youngest brother, who is now 24. I'm not sure exactly how old Forrest would have been at this point, but he joins up with the Tennessee Mounted Rifles, and he joins as a private. He's not really trying to have any leadership role or to have any responsibility, essentially. But Obviously, he's a very wealthy man. Other people want him to, you know, be a leader. And so some of the other prominent citizens go to the governor and they tell him to give Forrest a commission to make him, you know, an officer or something. And so he agrees. He knows Forrest. The governor knows Forrest. And he makes him a... I'm not sure exactly what his rank would have been. Lieutenant Colonel. See? Research. So anyway, Tennessee is extremely short of everything to fight a war. So Forrest spends a lot of his own money to... Because at this point, Forrest has a ridiculous amount of money. And he thought, well, if the South loses the war, I'm going to lose all my money anyway. And so he spends a lot of money. He spends $20,000. Hang on. See, Timon can edit out all these pauses. Isn't that cool? So $20,000 in 1861. $700,000. Which, actually, if you look at being worth $52 million, that's actually a pretty good chunk out of your net worth. But he spends $700,000 to get top-of-the-line handguns for his troops. And he's trying to essentially raise an army out of nothing. So he goes to Kentucky. Kentucky is supposed to be or is technically neutral at this point. And Forrest is... So Forrest goes to Kentucky to try to recruit people and to buy equipment from merchants there. Kentucky is supposed to be neutral, so they're not necessarily supposed to sell to somebody, but he buys a bunch of handguns. He smuggles them back into Tennessee in boxes that he marks potatoes, which I don't know why he picked potatoes, but he smuggles saddles out. He marks them leather, which, I mean, I guess is pretty close. And he smuggles other equipment out and stuff, and he labels that coffee. So he's trying to get as much stuff as he can to get his men armed. And meanwhile, he's trying to stay away from Union spies because they are trying to keep, obviously, exactly this thing from happening, right? They do not want the South to be able to get weapons and to get all these arms to be able to fight them, right? Because this is, at this point, the war is basically, if not started. So Forrest evades these spies, makes it back, and he's recruiting, and he's allegedly a very good recruiter because he's tall, he's wealthy, he's got, you know, he's got everything going for him, and so he is able to recruit very well. So not long after this, he has another very close scrape with death, and there were some Unionists that he tries to arrest. And as they're going up to the house, Forrest is riding with another guy, and Forrest is not dressed, apparently, in all his finery like a lieutenant colonel would normally be. And so when they ride up to the house, there's another guy riding with him that is very well dressed. There's another guy that is with him that has a new uniform on and all this stuff. So when they ride up to the house, this guy that they're going to arrest shoots at the guy beside him and kills him instantly. And Forrest, once again, is not hurt, which is kind of wild. So now Forrest has a bunch of guys ready to fight. And they are armed with all the stuff that he bought them, and so they're ready to roll. And so he gets into a fight around Sacramento. And this was essentially his first battle. So when he gets there to fight these Yankee individuals that he is not fond of, and they've been riding really hard, so he doesn't have a lot of it. He doesn't have a lot of guys with him. They're kind of all strung out along the road because they're trying to catch these guys. And when about 150 of his guys get there, he splits them into three groups. And he says, "Blow the charge, Isham," which I think is just a great tagline. It's a great motto. Blow the charge, Isham. And so this is back still when they have the bugles, and so they blow the charge. You guys want to hear what should we look up what it sounds like when they blow the charge? There's a lot of backstory to some of these battles. I know I'm jumping really, really far, you know, but I know it sounds a little bit disjointed maybe, but you know, you just have to bear with me a little bit because I haven't really done this. So, you know, there's a YouTube video. It's 19 seconds. It's a cavalry charge bugle call. It's 19 seconds and it has 1.4 million views. And the top comment is only 1800s kids will remember this. That's great. All right. So this is the cavalry charge bugle call. I don't know. We're just painting a picture here. I don't know why I played that, but we're painting a picture here of what this looks like. So Forrest has these three groups of guys. He says, blow the charge, and they attack him. And Forrest is insane. And this is basically his first battle. But it is his first battle. But when you look back over his life, this is, you know, the 20th time that he's been shot at. Not the 20th time he's been shot at, but, you know, he's already faced so many of the things that make men in battle kind of fear. You know, that whole thing that men, before they go into battle, where they're worried about how they'll act when they're shot at. You know, Forrest has already been shot at. He already knows what it's like to have people killed next to him. He already knows all this stuff. So Forrest just attacks. When he sees them, he just attacks. And this is pretty much how he handles his entire military career. So he basically routs them. Somebody said that there were at least 50 shots fired at him in 5 minutes. And one shot hits his horse's head, but didn't kill him. And Forrest kills 9 of the enemy, which is another time that it just seems, you know, you just read this story and it's like Forrest kills 9 people. And then cut to commercial. Which is just wild. So in his first battle, he, as the leader, which, you know, a lot of times in battles, the leaders are kind of in the back and just directing the whole thing. But Forrest just didn't really, I guess that's not how he, you know, did things. So he kills 9 of the enemy that day. At one point, there's a Union cavalryman that gets in his way, and they get in a hand-to-hand struggle. And another Yankee comes up to help, and a Confederate shoots him, and they just keep attacking. Forrest is attacked by 3 guys, and shoots the one, and he just keeps the stories. I mean, you guys can read the stories, but anyway, Forrest's horse goes down, and he just gets right back up, and he goes, "Johnson, get me a horse," because there's a private close to him named Johnson. So the other guys, he gets a horse, he gets back. And the one thing people said about him is how different he appeared when he was in battle. Somebody said he could scarcely believe him to be the man I had known for several months. his face flushed till it bore a striking resemblance to a painted Indian warrior's, and his eyes, usually mild in their expression, were blazing with the intense glare of a panther's springing upon its prey. And the way he talked, changed. Somebody said, "I'll swear I never heard such a voice. It penetrated you through and through and made you move." So at this point, the kind of the tactics that Forrest uses throughout his military career kind of get cemented in this battle. And they were, somebody kind of made a list of them. Somebody did make a list of them. The first one is he always outflanked the enemy on both flanks and tried to get in behind him, which obviously is very disconcerting. At the first sign of confusion of the enemy, he always attacked, and he always attacked with almost everything. He almost always attacked with everything he had and never left anything in reserves. He had zero military training, and the military training at that time was that if you attack, you leave about a third in reserve so that you have spares to draw from if you need help. He always led from the front, and it was pretty confusing for the people that he was fighting because it was just not... These guys were educated. They had a lot of the generals of that time had gone to West Point, and so they were very educated on how war was supposed to be fought. And Forrest just didn't adhere to any of that stuff, and it made him very confusing and frustrating to fight. He never stood and took a charge. He always just attacked. One thing he said was, "Never stand and take a charge. Charge them too," which was just funny. You know, if somebody's attacking you, just attack them too. And he always did what the enemy least expected. And he seemed to really enjoy fighting, which is, I guess it's not that rare when you look at generals throughout history that for them to enjoy fighting. But the level that he enjoyed it at does seem a little bit unusual. He put a flyer out, one recruiting advertisement, said, "Let's have some fun and kill some Yankees." And it does seem like he just enjoyed war. He had no, doesn't seem like he had any fear or any of that natural, like, I don't want to get in a fight. He just didn't really have that. So after that one, the next kind of major thing was at Fort Donelson. The Confederates want to hold Fort Donelson, and the Yankees are trying to attack it. It's basically, and this is not really something where, as a cavalry leader, is not really a position you want to be in. Okay, so now we are at Fort Donelson, and Fort Donelson, the Confederates have a fort there that they're in charge of, and the Union Army is trying to attack it. And man, I can't figure out what's going on with my sound right now. Maybe I bring it up a little. Ooh, there we go. Much better. Okay. So the Confederates have this... Why does that sound too loud all of a sudden? But they have this Fort Donelson, and they do not want to get trapped there. They want to keep the lanes open to Nashville, and the commander there, well, there's a couple of them that are kind of in charge of, you know, keeping this, defending it, whatever. So Ulysses S. Grant is trying to attack the fort and trying to essentially trap all the Confederates there. This is there's so much that goes into all this, but anyway. So the rebels dig in. We're back to calling them rebels. I mean, let's be honest. Let's be honest. They're rebels. So they dig in. They're trying to hold this fort, and the Union Army, or the Union, attacks with gunboats. So Fort Donelson is on the Cumberland River, and they really want to keep this, but they're not. They don't think that they can. But for some reason, and some of these things that you look back on, it just doesn't make sense. And you know, obviously, hindsight's always 20/20, and so some of these things just don't make sense. But they, rather than just leave and get out while the getting's good, they decide to try to hold it. And Forrest is bruising for a fight, but the General Pillow is there, and he is normally really aggressive, but there's an aide standing next to him, and he's killed by a Union sniper, essentially. And so Pillow just gets a little... The theory is this just kind of gets in Pillow's head. So I hope this doesn't suck too bad for you guys, because this... It's just challenging to make this make sense. But anyway, the Union gunboats, they attack the fort, and Forrest talks to a preacher, and he says, "For God's sake, pray, for nothing but God Almighty can save the fort." And now the Yankees make a mistake, because they bring their ships in too, they're a little too confident, and they bring their ships in a little too close to the fort. They could have stayed, because they had better guns. They could have stayed out of range of the fort's guns and essentially just shot at it until they won. But they get too close. They get within range of the Confederates, and the Confederates are, at least in this battle, they're better shots than the Union boats are. And so they really give them the what for. And so the boats have to leave. And this was a huge threat, but the Yankees just didn't handle it well. So at this point, they basically just need a way out. They need a way that they can, the rebels need to find a way to just get out, because Grant is bringing so many people in, and it's just not really going to work to try to hold it. So they try to fight and basically keep their path open to Nashville, because the Confederates really want to protect Nashville. They want to be able to save Nashville. but at some point, the Confederate generals decide that their escape route is cut off, and Forrest doesn't believe it. He wants to try to get out because he believes that they still can, but They don't take his word for it. So they're talking about surrendering to Grant, essentially surrendering the whole fort. And Forrest says, "I'll be damned if I'll surrender." He said, "I did not come here to surrender my command, and I would rather my bones bleach on the hillside than go to a Yankee prison." And he goes to his regiment, and he says, "Boys, these people..." It's kind of funny to me that he refers to all the generals that are his superiors as "these people." But he says, "These people are talking about surrendering, and I'm going out of this place before they do or bust hell wide open." He said, "We're going out even if we die in the attempt." So he gets his battalion together, about 500 guys. He's joined up by quite a few other people, about 1,000 other guys, and they decide to make a run for it, essentially. And at this point... Forrest is proven right. Their escape route is not actually cut, and he makes it out without firing a shot. The general, there's a couple generals that tried to escape, and the guy that is left surrenders the whole fort. He surrenders 10,000 men, which is a huge, huge amount of men, especially for the South that was always short on men. And if they would have listened to Forrest and got out the way that he escaped himself, they could have saved all those, most likely. Forrest thought that he could have gotten 2/3 of the men out, which would have still been a huge amount and could have made a very big difference in the Battle of Shiloh, which was another huge battle that is coming up just shortly. So he gets word that Nashville has already fallen, and he says, I'm going into that town. He says, I don't care if there's 10,000 Yankees in there, and any of you that don't want to follow me, fall out of the ranks right here. Forward march, which is just, he's just a bad man, you know. So he gets into Nashville. The Nashville has just kind of dissolved into rioting. There's no real order, and there's mobs. So Forrest rides into the mob. He finds the leader and knocks him out with the butt end of a revolver. And after that, there wasn't a whole lot of issues with mobs. there were later, and Forrest brings up fire engines and sprays water at the crowd, and essentially just brings order back into the city and then leaves again. After which it immediately descended back into disorder. But no, it doesn't say that. So this brings us to the Battle of Shiloh. I don't know. I feel like maybe we'll call it there. I did not expect to only get this far into this guy, so maybe the next time we will have to speed it up a little and move a little quicker, but for now, that is going to have to do because I have a limited amount of time. All right, let's talk about the news a little bit, and then we will wrap it up. Haley blasts Trump for his comments on black voters. I believe this is Nikki Haley is upset at Trump because I think he was suggesting that his criminal indictments and he said his mugshot appeals to black voters and said that what's happening to him happens to them. He said, I got indicted for nothing, for something that is nothing. They were doing it because it's election interference, and then I got indicted a second time and a third time and a fourth time, and a lot of people said that's why the black people like me, because they have been hurt so badly and discriminated against, and they actually viewed me as I'm being discriminated against. So, of course, because he said anything about race, everyone is losing their minds, which I'm personally not a huge Trump fan, but I do think he kind of gets the raw end of some deals. Golden State Warriors reportedly make Steve Kerr highest paid NBA coach in history. The Ukrainian war is now 2 years old, which seems crazy. Two Americans believed dead after escaped prisoners hijack a yacht in Grenada. So it's kind of interesting. Three escaped prison inmates may have killed two people believed to be American citizens on a yacht they are thought to have hijacked as they tried to make their way from Grenada to St. Vincent and the Grenadines. Wow. So I guess I'm not going to Grenada. Far-right speaker tells CPAC attendees that his goal is to overthrow democracy. That seems like an unwise thing to say at best. There was a guy that died in a Russian prison that people are very upset about. Unexploded World War II bomb discovered in residential garden. This is why Biden's dog keeps having issues at the White House. Okay, so the story is that Biden's dog bit like 24 Secret Service agents. Which is so funny. And then everybody was commenting like,
if my dog bites two people, it gets put down, but his can bite 24. It's like, well, I mean, he also has the nuclear codes. So do you really want to compare yourselves? Like, do you really want to compare yourself to the president of the United States? Yeah, that's what I thought. Owl that escaped Central Park Zoo is dead after hitting a building. I guess it wasn't really used to flying in the city, would be my guess. Yeah. US-UK carry out fourth round of coalition strikes against Houthi targets in Yemen. I kind of want to see what this is about. I don't even know who the Houthi are. The strikes include at least dozens of targets across multiple locations in Yemen. So I feel like it would be very disconcerting to have people just striking your country from, you know, drones and stuff. I just don't really think we should be doing that. I mean, I get there's some bad things going on. But to say your country has some issues, and so what we're going to do is missiles, and then you just push a button. It just, I don't know. Judge formally says Trump owes $454 million in civil fraud case. Countdown starts for him to put up money for the appeal. Man, that's a lot of money. A New York judge on Friday formally ordered Donald Trump to pay $454 million, including interest, a move that will give the former president 1 month to post nearly $500 million to appeal the fraud verdict. Wow. That is intense. Most Americans want verdict on Trump election subversion charges before 2024 vote. Yeah, I don't really think most people that are voting for Trump care about any election subversion charges. I just, I feel like the people that are going to vote for Trump would, you know how he said he could shoot somebody in the middle of Times Square and people would still vote for him? I do feel like there's a certain amount of truth to that where the people, and I'm not saying Trump wasn't, I have my questions about him as a man. I actually think he was a pretty good president. Trump narrowly leads Biden in general election rematch, which is bizarre to me. I mean, think what you will about Trump, but the fact that you would rather have Biden blows my mind. The guy is not well. He's unwell. I think we can all agree that he does not look healthy. So it blows my mind that you would rather have somebody like that than, now if they had a good, I think they should have gotten behind that RFK guy. He was very well spoken. I actually liked him. I would not have had a huge problem with him being, everybody hated the way he talked and stuff, but honestly, for a Democrat, I thought he had some pretty good thoughts, I thought. But his voice is rough. His voice is rough. Prosecutors say soccer star romanticized the cocaine trade. Colorado Springs dorm shooting suspect had a handgun and a loaded AK-47 in his vehicle at time of arrest. Well, listen, if you're going to shoot somebody, get rid of any guns that might be in your vehicle. That's my advice. As a, you know, the CEO of this podcast, that would be my advice. Medical examiner uncovers cause of death for 11-year-old in Texas. How do you not know what the cause of death is? She was killed by a family friend. Well, that's just awful. Ford stopped shipping F-150 Lightning electric pickups. South Carolina's economy is booming by almost any measure, but the local mood is dour. That's so funny to me. But the local mood is dour. That's what the media does so well. It's like, you go talk to, who did they talk to? Did they talk to the person, having a cigarette, drinking a Diet Coke outside of the 7-Eleven. You know, I'm guessing they didn't talk to the guys that are running, you know, owning all the businesses and buying up all the real estate in South Carolina that are making millions, you know, because I'm guessing the mood there with the economy booming is not that dour unless you're talking to the wrong people. That's just my guess. All right. Let's take us out of here with a little bit more Conrad Fisher. Oh, all right. You guys have a good rest of your week. I'm out.
Don't have trouble with a hammer or a 50-hour week. Oh, I can swing them both if I need to. But I've been working every day and walking in my sleep. And lately it's been wearing me down. I don't want to live high in the Beverly Hills, but I hope I get to visit them someday. I don't need a lot of money, don't buy my thrills. I just want to live life my way. I just want to live life my way. Hate to complain or get down in the mouth, but I surely could use a vacation. I'm gonna pack up my bags, gonna point the car south. I'll see ya when I see you around. I don't wanna live high in the Beverly Hills, but I hope I get to visit them someday. I don't need a lot of money, don't buy my thrills. I just wanna live life my way. I just wanna live life my way. I'm gonna seize the day, take the time, somewhere sunny I can slow it down. I don't wanna live high in the Beverly Hills, but I hope I get to visit them someday. I don't need a lot of money, don't buy my thrills. I just wanna live life. I hope I get to visit them someday. I don't need a lot of money, don't buy my thrills. I just wanna live life my way. I just wanna live life.